Here on Gadget Lab, we dive deep into the tech universe, tackling questions like, is giving companies access to your genetic material a good idea? And are the latest phone releases really that different than the last ones? We want to help you make informed decisions about what is worth your attention. And here's something that is undeniably worth your time, a digital subscription to Wired. Lucky for you, we are giving Gadget Lab listeners an exclusive discount, 20% off an annual subscription to Wired. Just visit wired.com and use the promo code GL20 to get 20% off a digital subscription. Use GL20 to get exclusive access to stories on the latest innovations like AI, deepfakes, and VR, as well as today's most talked about people in technology.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Julian.
Lauren.
Julian, if Google makes gobs of money off of advertising, why does it bother making phones?
It wants to be Apple.
That's a good one. Wait, should I Google that? Does Google want to be Apple? All right, we're going to talk about that on the show this week. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I'm Lauren Good. I'm a senior writer at Wired. My usual co-host, Michael Calori, is out this week. Hopefully, he's getting some rest and relaxation. But luckily, we have Wired Senior Associate Editor Julian Chikatu to fill his place. I said that this was going to become the Julian show at some point. I feel even more emboldened by this statement now. Hey, Julian, thanks for joining me.
Hello, happy to be here.
So, Julian, we talk about tech events a lot on this show, although, of course, in 2020, they've changed and we're no longer traveling to report on the ground. We're reporting in our jammies. But for the past 3 weeks, we've seen hardware announcements from Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, and there's been a lot of emphasis on gadgets and services for the home. And I think maybe the most noteworthy example is Amazon's flying home security drone, which we're going to talk about. But this all raises the question, right, of why do these tech companies want to literally be hovering in our homes? In some ways, they're using the pandemic as part of their marketing, right? We're all home, so you need this tech. But it's also another way, of course, to learn more about us as quote-unquote users. Yes, I just watched The Social Dilemma. We're all users. As you share more and more of your personal data with these companies. So let's talk about Google first, because that was just this past Wednesday. Julian, what were some of the announcements that stood out to you?
The two big ones, of course, that everyone usually tunes into Google for are its Pixel phones. And this time they're doing something a little different. Instead of a Pixel and a Pixel XL version, this year we got a Pixel 4a 5G and a Pixel 5. So if you haven't been keeping up with Pixel phones, there was a Pixel 4a that they announced in August, which usually would have happened in May. Basically, everything got pushed around, and so it kind of threw their entire product line into a wrench. And now we're stuck with a slightly different version of that Pixel 4a that came out in August, and the new next generation Pixel 5. But it's all kind of weird and confusing because the Pixel 4a 5G is kind of similar to the Pixel 5. Anyway, all in all, the most interesting tidbit out of that is that Google is not using the big flagship processor for the Pixel 5. It's using a Snapdragon 765 chipset, which is kind of a mid-range chip. And this is sort of signaling that, hey, we're not going to make flagship $1,000 phones anymore, or at least not this year. We're going to make a more affordable phone. And this phone is indeed a little cheaper than last year's Pixel 4. It starts at $699. So it's about $100 less. And so that's sort of, you know, that was the big Pixel phone announcement. It's a pretty, I'd say, bare bones phone in terms of the feature set that it has. There are a couple of new software features, some improvements to the camera software, but otherwise nothing too crazy or nothing that rocks the boat, unlike many of the other phones we saw this year.
Yeah, it's perhaps unsurprising both that the cameras might be some of the best elements of these phones because Pixel phones do have reputations for having fantastic cameras. And also that Google got a little weird with its naming convention. I mean, these phones are actually like the Pixel 4a 5G and the Pixel 5 5G. They just didn't want to call the Pixel 5 5G, right?
I mean, they could have done Pixel 5G, but I feel like that also would have been very confusing.
Well, is it all Pixel 5s are 5G phones?
Yes. So that's the other big thing, I guess. You know, 5G is a thing. These are the first Pixel phones with 5G. 5G is the next-gen networking technology that's following 4G LTE. But the problem is, you know, as many of the Android phones that are coming out these days that have 5G support, it doesn't really matter yet because chances are you probably can't access 5G anywhere in the US. I mean, there are slivers of tiny pockets of cities where you can go outside with your phone and you might be able to connect to 5G. And sometimes it will give you definitely a lot faster speeds than 4G LTE. But for the most part, most people aren't going to be using 5G constantly the way they are using 4G LTE for maybe another year or two. I'd say maybe even more than that.
And there were two other gadgets from Google announced this week. One is a smart speaker. The other is something for your TV. Talk about these.
Yeah, so the Chromecast with Google TV. This one's, I think, the more interesting one of the lot because Google has this thing called Android TV. It bundles it into TVs that other manufacturers make and sell. And that's just sort of a software interface for TVs. And the Chromecast, as a lot of people might know, was this cheap dongle that you just plug into your smart or dumb TV. And it just gives you the ability to cast content from your phone straight to the TV. So you can just cast a Netflix video, no need to use a remote or anything like that. Now it's bringing that Android TV layer, which it's now rebranding, I should say rebranding because it originally was called Google TV.
Oh yeah, back in like 2010.
Yeah, then they changed it to Android TV and now it's Google TV again. So they're actually gonna phase out Android TV over the next 2 years and completely just change it over to Google TV. It's just like, I feel like every year they just hire someone new and it's like, I wanna change it back or they just gotta get it together. But so basically it's Google TV and you get an interface much like, you know, a Fire Stick or a Roku and you have a remote. So you can actually use that remote to talk to an assistant and control certain things or just, you can also still cast content from your phone if you want to do it that way. And I think it's around $50 and you can buy it right now. And the other thing was the Nest audio speaker. It's kind of replacing the original Google Home that came out. Basically kind of looks like the Google Home Max that they announced a few years ago, but it's a lot smaller. And it's just, you know, a smart speaker that does what all other smart speakers do. It plays music pretty well and it lets you talk to Google Assistant and ask for the weather and all sorts of things like that.
Julian, the Google Assistant is something that I think ties a lot of these products together, and I think it's in literally every single one of the products that they announced earlier this week. But we didn't hear about too many updates to Assistant this week. Like, I remember back at I/O a couple years ago, the stuff that Google was showing off with regards to its artificial intelligence was mind-blowing, right? Like, it's going to make a reservation for you. And then last year, we heard about how it's going to effectively block spam calls for you and do all this crazy stuff. And there's a little bit of that this week, but not a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to last year's announcement, Pixel 4, it was basically the announcement of that next-gen Google Assistant, which was, you know, going to be a lot faster at responding to you. And fast forward a year later, and I feel like they didn't even touch about that. They didn't talk about anything related to that. It really boiled down to one of the bigger announcements with Assistant-related stuff was Hold For Me, which is a new feature in the Pixel phone specifically. And it basically allows you to use Google Assistant to be on the call while someone puts you on hold, so you don't need to listen to that elevator music anymore. You can just sort of put the phone down, assistant will sort of be in your place, and then when the person on the other end comes back, it'll give you a ping or something alerting you to the fact that, hey, you should pick up your phone now. But you know, that as exciting and as cool as that sounds, because who wants to listen to the same song over and over again for 2 hours? That seems kind of small compared to stuff that we've seen in past years. And it just is a very weird difference from last year, where it was, you know, assistant everywhere, to this year, where it felt more like they were focusing a little more on the products rather than the software side of things. Mm-hmm. But Lauren, you've also been to, you know, so many Pixel events. What do you think that they should have announced? Or did you have something in mind that you really wanted to see that they have announced before, or something you think that they should look at? Is there something that you missed here?
Yeah, to me, I'm always keeping an ear out for what companies don't talk about at their events, because I think that tends to say a lot. In this case, I was listening to see if Google would say anything about wearables. They didn't. You might remember that Google acquired Fitbit about a year ago, but that's been undergoing some pretty intense regulatory scrutiny. So at the time of this taping, the deal had not been approved, and it feels like Google's in a bit of a holding pattern with consumer wearables while it figures out the Fitbit deal. Google will say, well, we have headphones, and so that's a wearable, which is true. But I mean, in terms of something that goes on the wrist or is a health tracker or competes directly with Apple Watch, they haven't really said anything about that. They didn't say anything, of course, when they announced Nest Audio, about the Sonos lawsuit that's ongoing. Sonos alleges that Google has infringed on its patents for wireless audio. Google also didn't mention anything related to laptops or two-in-ones, which is kind of surprised, Julian, because you probably remember that in recent years they've put out Pixel books and Pixel slates and things like that, and we haven't heard anything about that. But I think in general, we're kind of at the point where with these tech product releases, that even small things, they can be a big deal, right? I mean, all these products are internet connected. They're processing your data in some way. They connect to the cloud, and they kind of underpin the business models of these companies that are being scrutinized really closely right now. So even small products, you have to think about in the context of who it is that they're really serving.
Yeah, I'd say they're not as playful as in recent years, especially when it comes to their phones. You know, you look at them and they're perfectly fine, solid, probably going to be our top picks, just like our the previous Pixels. But they're not weird or quirky, or even the colors aren't, you know, bright or flashy like they used to be. So definitely an understated year.
Not a very googly event, all things considered. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the drone that wants to fly inside your home.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Each episode features insight you won't find anywhere else from the center of the conversation surrounding emerging technologies like AI. Right now on the podcast, you can hear a special episode where Brad Smith lays out Microsoft's vision for a vibrant marketplace driving the new AI economy. To hear more, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hackers and cyber criminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston. And on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click Here. Stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machines, satellite, engine ignition.
Click here.
And liftoff.
Click here every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. And since we took a break, approximately 7 more smart speakers have launched into the market. But really, before the Google event this week, there was last week's Amazon hardware event. Now, Amazon for the past few years has done this kind of rapid-fire deluge of hardware products each fall. And its strategy is a little bit similar to Google's, right? It wants to be inside your home in every element of your life. Julian, give us a quick rundown of what Amazon announced at its event last week.
Yeah, I mean, it was the usual barrage of new Echo speakers. There's one with a screen now that sort of rotates to wherever you're facing in the room. There's a Ring car alarm. There's an Eero Wi-Fi 6 router. And also there was a surprise announcement of a game streaming service called Luna. And it's very much like Google Stadia or Microsoft's xCloud, which basically lets you, with a high-speed internet connection, you can stream games from the cloud to your TV, phone, browser, just about anywhere. And it's basically, you know, Amazon diving into games more. They have their own game studio. They came out with a game recently, and they're developing many more games. And of course, they own Twitch. So this is a natural way to get all the millions of people that watch Twitch streams of other people playing games integrated into this game streaming service as well.
And we have to talk about the drone. Now, the drone is part of Amazon's Ring brand. Amazon acquired Ring. Ring is known for its home security cameras. It's a popular home security camera, also a little bit controversial because Amazon has forged these partnerships with hundreds of law enforcement agencies around the country to share the video if customers agree or opt in to have their video clips shared with, like, say, the local police. And so some civil rights advocates and other organizations and even lawmakers have said that Amazon should stop this practice, but they continue. And in the meantime, Amazon continues to ship products under the Ring brand. And this new drone is one of those. So it's called it's the Always On Cam.
I think it's called the Always Home Cam.
Yeah. Always Home Cam, not always on, because that would be even creepier. And so it's docked, right, in your home. And when it's docked, there is a camera, but the camera is covered by the dock. And then you can program it so that if there's movement or some kind of activity in another room of the home, the drone just kind of rises up out of its dock and flies to that part of your home and starts recording the incident, which in my conversation with Amazon hardware executive Dave Limp, he said, and I'm paraphrasing, but it could record something as benign as a raccoon that's gotten in your house, which one of our editors actually had that happen in her house this week. I was like, that doesn't happen, does it? But then it actually happened. Or it could be something more serious, such as an intruder in your home. Naturally, and perhaps unsurprisingly, people reacted pretty strongly to this drone, myself included. My initial thought was, nope. I don't want a drone flying around the house. But Julian, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of this, like, I understand some of the benefits. You know, I saw someone on Twitter saying, what if, you know, you have old people in the home and you want to use something remotely to take care of them without having to configure a bunch of cameras and things like that? Sure, makes sense, I guess. I can't, you know, they kind of even touted this feature that, like, hey, it makes a sound so you know that it's coming. So, you know, you can, I guess, be prepared to have this flying thing coming to your room. But it's still, that freaks me out even more. Like, I just don't want to walk around or I'm just hanging out. And suddenly this super loud buzzing sound, like a murder hornet, comes flying around in my home. Like, that just would freak me out. Not to mention, people have pets, and this thing is, like, either going to freak your dog out or your cat's going to destroy it in 5 seconds.
Yeah, how would your dog feel about this?
He would probably bark like crazy and then bark even more and then go hide under the bed.
But Amazon would probably make the argument that that's the desired intention. Like, you'll know if someone's in the house because the dog is going to be barking at the drone, which is then going to be flying out of your bedroom into the living room or whatever it is. Imagine if you have, like, teenagers who aren't coming downstairs for dinner, and it's like you just send the drone. It just hovers over them while they're, like, making TikToks or something. It's like, you have to come down to dinner. I don't know. There's just so many, like, weird. It's a drone in your house. It's a drone inside your house that you have allowed into your home and you've programmed to do the thing that it's going to do. And Amazon is saying that it's private because its rotors make noise. Like, and because also when it's docked, the dock happens to block the camera. Like, that's not like privacy first design. That's just the way the thing works. But they're like, don't worry, those are the privacy features. Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, you that's a good point. Like, at the end of the day, you know, it's, they can say that their, you know, clouds are secure and all that, but it's still an internet connected product, and there have been a lot of Ring breaches before. So you can imagine even being more terrified of having this moving camera in your home that's, you know, has still, nothing is perfect. This thing could very well be hacked and someone could control the drone in your home.
Yes. Yeah. Like, just the other day, my Apple TV suddenly went on for no reason. I mean, I didn't turn it on. And then a passcode appeared. And so the only thing I could think of is that a neighbor who lives close enough was trying to cast from an iDevice to my Apple TV, picked it up on the wireless network somehow and was trying to like cast my TV. And I was like, imagine if that happened, but instead of just your Apple TV turning on, it was a noisy drone flying around your living room. Like, what the actual... Now, I should say that initially, I asked Amazon about the Ring partnership and whether or not this Always Home drone camera, if the Ring partnership with law enforcement would extend to that camera. And they initially said yes, and then later on came back and emailed and said, actually, no, the drone is not going to be a part of that partnership program. So as I understand it right now, or whenever it launches later this year, you will not have the option as a consumer to share those videos with law enforcement. Amazon also said that now all Ring videos will be end-to-end encrypted by the fourth quarter of this year. So they are starting to take steps to make the footage that's captured on your Ring camera more private and more secure, which is good. It's been a long time coming, and that's a good thing. But I think a lot of people are going to buy this drone like as a novelty just to see what it's like. But I just have a hard time thinking that this would be a real value add to your home.
It's also like $200 or $250 or something like that. It's expensive. So it's not even a relatively affordable thing that Amazon, which is usually what it offers, offering.
Right. And part of their reasoning for making it was, well, for some people, if you want a Ring camera or some kind of security camera at home that you would normally put like in your windowsill or outside or wherever it is, and maybe you want one in every room, but you can't afford to buy a $200 camera for every single room of your home, so instead you use the flying drone. That still doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I would still say probably just get a couple extra cameras if you can and just use those. Yeah. Okay, so drone aside, which is a nice little slice of our dystopian future, what stands out to me, particularly when you look at the Google events and the Amazon events back to back, is how much it feels like their hardware strategies are starting to merge a little bit. I'm wondering if you agree with this, because when Google first announced the Pixel line, it had done the Nexus phones, which were like sort of cheaper mid-range phones. And then it said it was doing the Pixel, and then it made the Pixel really nice for a couple years and was charging $800 for it. And the question was whether they were going to be able to compete with Apple in hardware. And now it seems like Google is scaling back a little bit and really going for either the middle of the market or even the low end of the market. I mean, the Chromecast, for example, still not as inexpensive as an Amazon Fire Stick or some of the Roku products, but it's only $50 and it has a remote. And Rick Osterloh from Google said, we don't think the world needs another $1,000 phone right now. So I think Google is very clearly sort of putting its stake in like the mid-range market for phones.
Yeah, I think they're being a little smart about it, because I think usually what people have always said historically about Pixel phones is that they're overpriced, because, you know, you compare it to a Samsung, which is, you know, you can compare the specs to a fine degree and they're almost always way better on the Samsung, even though at the end of the day, you know, they're pretty both good phones. But, you know, Samsung pushes all this new hardware versus Google sort of settles now and then and maybe doesn't include the best Wi-Fi chip or something like that. But it priced them very similarly to other flagships. But now I think this price point is a lot more stomachable for a lot more people. It just kind of just makes sense with what they're offering. But also I've thought of Google hardware as sort of a reference for what everyone else does, because, you know, I think Google's intention is still very similar to its Nexus days in that it wants to produce something good that people can buy and use, but this is also pushing software that they're, you know, providing for so many thousands of other companies, whether it's a TV maker that's using the new Google TV or, you know, other Android makers that want to do their own thing. Like, this is the software that's powering it all. And I think this is a good way of Google saying, here's what you can do with Android 11, or here's what you can do with Google TV. And then these other companies can sort of, you know, take it, add layers over it and improve it, or do their own thing and improve it in some other way.
Right. Like, they're, Amazon and Google have slightly different end goals, right? Which is that Amazon wants you to shop and buy more things, and it wants to use the data that it has to get you to shop more and buy more things. And Google sells ads, as we mentioned at the very top of the show. But they're both using low-cost hardware as sort of delivery mechanisms for your data in order to accomplish those goals.
Yeah, compared to like Apple, who prides itself on not sharing your data at all. So it justifies the higher price for being able to secure your data in that way.
Right. All right, Julian, one last question for you. Of all of the products that we've seen announced in the past few weeks, and you had to choose one product from each company, so that would be Apple, Amazon, Google, and then Microsoft, which we didn't really get to talk about much, but Microsoft put out the weird Duo recently. Which of these would you choose?
Well, from Google, I'd probably pick the Chrome. Well, I actually did just buy the Chromecast because I've used a Chromecast all my life, and I feel like this would be cool to experience Chromecast with a remote and actually have an interface on my TV. From Amazon, I feel like I'd want the drone just to see what it's like, but I probably would regret it immediately and would go for something like the game streaming service. Just because that's an interesting field that's kind of growing lately. And then from Microsoft, probably the Surface Duo. I didn't rate it too highly. And I feel like, you know, it had a lot of issues, but they're promising to improve it. And I just really liked Microsoft's approach there. And I think I really liked the hardware. I just wish it wasn't as buggy. And I guess from Apple, I'd probably pick the iPad Air because that thing looks amazing.
Oh, these are good choices. Okay.
What about you? What would you pick?
Okay. From Google, I agree with you on the Chromecast. Would definitely get the Chromecast primarily because it now has a remote, and I wish that I could use the Google Chromecast remote on my Apple TV, if that was possible. Just throw the Apple TV remote out the window. From Amazon, they didn't talk about this at the hardware event, but a couple weeks before, they announced this super weird wearable called the Halo Band. And I'm intrigued enough by that I would probably try that. Apple, I think I would try the Fitness Plus service when that launches. So not a piece of hardware, but a service, because I don't know, like digital fitness stuff. And I think that would be fun to try out and see if it's really a Peloton killer. And then Microsoft, I'm going to agree with you on that too. I would go with the Duo. But no, this is like, I wouldn't actually buy the Duo. I wouldn't actually spend $1,400 on it, but I have this vision of owning the Duo, and then someday, many years from now, my grandkids will be going through my gadget library and they'll be like, "What's this, Grandma?" I'll be like, "Well, kids, back in the pandemic of 2020, Microsoft put out a phone, but it's not a phone. Don't call it a phone. That's this bizarre oddity, a dual screen device with a giant hinge down the middle running Android, and charged people $1,400 for it. And that was innovation in 2020. I just think it'd be hilarious. It's just a weird thing that I like want to try. So yeah, those are my choices. So those are the things that we would buy. But we're going to take a quick break, and we come back, we're going to do recommendations of what we actually do own or are going to buy. Or just stay tuned.
Want a new podcast to look forward to each week? One that's entertaining, informative, and packed with actionable content? Come on, of course you do. Introducing The Jordan Harbinger Show. The Jordan Harbinger Show, which Apple named one of its best of 2018, is aimed at making you a better informed, more critical thinker so you can get a sense of how the world actually works and come to your own conclusions about what's happening, even inside your own brain. Jordan dives into the minds of fascinating people, from athletes, authors, and scientists, to mobsters, spies, and hostage negotiators. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R, B as in boy, I, N as in Nancy, G-E-R, in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now.
All right, Julian, what's your actual recommendation this week?
It's kind of hard to, it's basically building a PC, which is kind of a statement more than a product or something that to recommend. There's no one component I can say that you should get. We do have a recommendation on wired.com of what components that you might want to look into if you want to get started building your own PC. But I recently built one for my girlfriend because she was using a laptop. She was having back pains and muscle pain because she was just basically craning her neck down all the time, staring at this little thing that wasn't very powerful. And me sitting with my giant desktop PC right next to her, I was like, you know what? I should build her a PC too.
Aww, so that's love.
So I built her a PC, you know, and she definitely now has a dual monitor setup because it can power that kind of thing. And it just basically, it was a lot of fun building it. It was a lot of, it was kind of cathartic and relaxing, and it was just very nice overall. But I also understand that that's not going to be the case for you because it can also feel very overwhelming and scary because these are computer components that can totally fry and burn if you do the wrong thing. Sorry, I hope I didn't scare you away, but basically just watch a video on YouTube or something, read our guide and get into some PC building. It's fun.
I love that recommendation.
And what about you? What are you recommending?
Well, remember a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about bundles and we were saying, curse the bundle.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I have to admit something. So Apple TV Plus, it's a lot better than I expected.
Oh, no.
It's very good. If you are one of those people like me who recently bought Apple hardware, and as a result, you got free access to Apple TV Plus because they're doing lots of promotions around it in the early days, then maybe check out the library if you are not going many places these days because of the pandemic and you're looking for things to watch. I'm also still watching Schitt's Creek, which I love, but I recommended that a couple weeks ago. So yeah. All right. Well, Julian, thank you so much for joining me on this week's show. I think Mike, you know, we miss him and everything, but this has been really fun.
This has been fun. Thank you so much for having me on as a co-host.
And thank you all for listening. If you have feedback, you can find all of us on Twitter. We'll put our Twitter handles in the show notes, and feel free to leave us a review as well. The show is produced by Boone Ashworth, who is going to make sense of this episode, and we're eternally grateful to him for that. And our executive producer is Alex Kappelman. Goodbye for now, and we'll be back next week.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the Reviews Director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, J. Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth: no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you. And how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.